Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
I'd just like to add that the spectrometer readout on the nickel-cadmium alloy mix indicates a good rich strobe and fade, decreasing incidence of wear to the pressure plate. If you could just...
Whoa, little fella, you're not speaking my language.
What my associate is trying to say is that our new brake pads are really cool. You're not even going to believe it. Like, let's say you're driving along the road with your family, and you're driving along, la la la, woo, and then all of a sudden there's a truck tire in the middle of the road, and you hit the brakes. Whoa, that was close. Now let's see what happens when you're driving with the other guy's brake pads. You're driving along, and all of a sudden the kids are yelling from the back seat, I gotta go to the bathroom, Daddy. Not now, damn it. Truck tire. I can't stop. Help! There's a cliff. And your family's screaming, oh, my God, we're burning alive. No, I can't feel my legs. In comes a meat wagon. And the medic gets out and says, oh, my God. New guy's in the corner puking his guts out. All because you want to save a couple extra pennies. And to me, it doesn't
get out.
Good afternoon to you. It is 17 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of July, in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us. It is 503-505-6964 if you would like to be part of today's program. 503-505-6964. I just have to say real quickly before we move on. That Chris Farley thing actually ties into something we're going to talk about here in just a few, something I saw on television last night. But also, that movie, until I saw the Don Hertzfeldt film Rejected, the animated film with the sort of, you know, my anus is bleeding. Before I saw Rejected, Tommy Boy actually, I think, was the only thing I had ever seen in the theater that nearly caused me to lose control of several functions of my body simultaneously. I think there was a point during Tommy Boy, it was when he walked into the room and David Spade has been corralling the tadpole while watching the woman in the bikini outside. And he's, you know, what's your favorite team? Is it the Yankees? Which is just so unbelievably juvenile and predictable and puerile. But I just sat there and just laughed like a loon. Just laughed like a crazy person.
I've never seen Tommy Boy.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Come on! You have never seen Tommy Boy?
No. I've seen little bits of it on TV because I went, oh, look, Brian Dennehy. And then I realized what I was watching and I went, oh, I don't want to watch Tommy Boy.
That you can't. No. You can't do that thing of it. Well, it's like I've seen it. I've seen little pieces
of
it.
No, I'm just saying. I'm not completely unfamiliar with it. But no, I have never actually sat down and watched Tommy Boy. And I know that it's purely snobbishness because I realize that I'm not completely I just watched Joe Dirt again the other night on TV. And
you watched Joe Dirt more than once, and you won't see Tommy
Boy.
And
I find Joe Dirt quite hilarious. So
it's not even snobbishness.
It was snobbishness at the time
it's
the
just
Tommy
arbitrary.
Boy came out. And it's never been something I've felt the need to go back and revisit.
Oh, but see, it is. It is. You should feel that need because it's not something you need to revisit. It's something you need to visit again for the first time, Don Taylor.
It would be.
Ah,
I just felt I needed to fess up because I was sitting here just giggling like crazy at that opening.
Were you giggling because it was funny, or are you playing along just
now?
No,
I genuinely found it funny. It was
very hilarious.
Funny.
Tommy Boy is it is the I mean, I know this is a relative statement, but it's the definitive Chris Farley movie. I mean, it really is. It is hands down. It's the best thing that guy ever did. There is no doubt about that at all. Tommy Boy is a fantastic film. And really, he and David Spade, that was the... You know, they did Black Sheep, which had its moments. Black Sheep, which is good, sort of sporadically. And
so
also,
now, which one is the one with Brian Dennehy in it?
That's Tommy Boy.
Oh, okay, good.
It really is it's quite a film, and it's got Dan Aykroyd in one of those. It's got Dan Aykroyd doing that thing he does, which is sort of like Bill Murray, where when he doesn't have to carry the film by himself, he's really good. You know, it's like you stick Dan Aykroyd in like a Driving Miss Daisy or something, and he actually manages to acquit him. Or in, was he in My Girl?
Who? With Dan Aykroyd? Yes, he was.
He's not like he's going to win an Oscar or something. He's quite good because it's not like the photo. Dan Aykroyd is, I think, kind of like Adam Sandler in this way. That Adam Sandler, even though he has made a huge amount of money and made a whole career out of, you know, carrying these films, he just doesn't seem like a leading man to me. He never has. Just like Ben Affleck doesn't seem like a leading man. Ben Affleck is the secondary guy. He's the best friend, the roommate, the sidekick, the pal, the partner. That's what Dan Aykroyd is like. But he's really good in Tommy Boy for that reason, because he's not the focus of the film. And David Spade and Chris Farley are like, I mean, it's like hand in glove the way they operate in this film. It really is a...
I've long been a big fan of David Spade. I had to see this movie Grown Ups recently, and he was the only good thing in that, simply because by sheer dint of his own talent that he was able to make the dialogue funny, and he was the only one who could.
Let's see what this person has to say that's calling us right now.
I can guess because I anchored the text box.
They're calling to be annoyed that you have not seen Tom. It just surprises me more than anything else. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. How can I help ye? Hello, hi. You're on the radio speaking to thousands of people. You were setting the tone for the entire show. Okay, thanks so much. I appreciate that. You know, you would think after 104 years of radio broadcasts happening in this country, that when someone answers the phone and says, "Hello, hi, you're on the air, speak now," that the response would not be a sort of, follow by the hang-up. All right. In any event, the thing about Tommy Boy is that it was so good, it was a kind of a victim of its own success in that it was so good it was immediately then sort of cloned. It was badly Xeroxed into Black Sheep and then into, goddamn, Beverly Hills Ninja, I think.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Which is terrible, which is one of the worst films I've ever seen. Black Sheep is sort of in between the two. Black Sheep is not a bad film, you know, sometimes, but it's not a great film ever. I mean, it's sort of moderately amusing. And again, it's got Tim Matheson, who is fantastic. Tommy Boy, though, is... I'm telling you. All right. Well, there you go. I'm not going to belabor the point, Don Taylor. I will say that I am I'm shocked and surprised and a little bit appalled.
It's not possible for me to have seen every movie. It's just not possible.
I'm just saying you ought to be working toward that goal. Speaking of Andy Dick, I do have a thing, though, because I think I mentioned Andy Dick just a few minutes ago. We have some Andy Dick sound that we're going to get to. I don't know how you feel about what's her name. Is it Joy Behar? Bahar? I never know how you pronounce her name. That chick from The View?
Yeah.
It's one of those who do you root for situations, because it's Joy Behar actually interviewing Andy Dick. And the thing is, I loathe both of those people just with a white hot intensity. You could not make me happier than to just have them set upon, by weasels on angel dust. So to have them sort of in an interview where she is speaking to him, and they're talking about Lindsay Lohan. I mean, it's just like it becomes this hydra of greatness and awkwardness. So we're going to get to that here in just a few. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. If you'd like to call us and then, you know, hang up, it's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com or dawn@rickemerson.com. And the chat box is open as well. That is at rickemerson.com, the website. So the phone number is 503-505-6964, or you can email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up today, we got Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. She will be joining us in the studio talking about the Best of Portland issue, which I believe is on stands as of today. Willamette Week's Best of Portland issue, which is coming out, it's either today or it's next Wednesday. It's one of the two. I believe it's today.
It's on the web today, so I'm assuming it must be on the stands today.
So there you go. We'll do the top five as well. Top five songs I always seem to hear at a Winco. We will have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority is actually, we didn't get to this yesterday. It is about the name Cujo. From whence does the name Cujo derive? We have a corpse watch coming up today, penis watch coming up today, taser watch coming up today, and lest ye forget, today's program is brought to you by The Cleaning Solution, owned and operated locally by one Mr. Michael Beatty. The Cleaning Solution, they will clean anything that your feet might touch, whether it's carpet, upholstery, stone, marble, etc. The Cleaning Solution. We'll talk more about that later on the day. Dawn Taylor will have news on the following headlines plus more.
Actress Lindsay Lohan is going into jail for a big 2 weeks. A Tea Party caucus has officially formed.
Caucus.
And what?
What?
Did I not say caucus right?
I was, yeah. I go ahead.
What?
Nothing.
And, what? Sarah Palin is very bad at geography.
Excellent. That is all on the way today, as well as just the whole pile of other things. I should probably, it's so difficult. I should probably get to this Andy Dick thing, I don't know, relatively soon. But before we do that, I have to just say, you know, we're out here striking out on our own and with you know, our own studio and our own network and no longer beholden to the man. One of the things, Che Guevara said that when you are operating outside the law, the only real disadvantage there is that you no longer have the protection of the law. Here's the thing that I have realized is that when you're operating outside of the sort of corporate system, there are also things to which you no longer have access, things that you didn't really appreciate before. And one of those things is just the bountiful cornucopia of free office supplies that always seem to be around.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's every time we need, you know, it's like a pair of scissors around here or a Post-it note. Or it's like, I went just bonkers the other day trying to find a stapler somewhere because I was trying to get something to staple. You know, it's at my house, I got staplers. Downstairs, they got staplers, but they were closed up. You know, every office in the world has got like 1,000 different staplers. Here, no. And the stapler is one of those things, there's really no substitute for that. Like, you can kind of dog-ear the corners or whatever, you fold them over. But if you don't have staplers, and if you don't have any staple-like accessory, like if you don't have a paperclip or something, there's really no way around that. And so Dawn and I just ran into this thing that I made you swear that we weren't going to tell the story.
And I knew you would.
But then now,
I knew you would.
But see, that is the dynamic of doing the show. It's like, you swear, okay, we can never tell anybody about this because it brings such shame and it makes us look like such rubes. But then as soon as the mics go on, it's like some weird electronic sodium pentothal where I'm incapable of holding the story in. So we have this, because we are here in an office building with other folk, we want to make sure that no one knocks on the door if they are, that no one walks in here thinking it's a different office or thinking they're going to a different, I don't want to lock the door, but somebody coming in interrupting the show if they think it's the Amway office or something. So we have this sign that we put up that says, hey, if you're here for the Rick Emerson show, hang out in the green room. We'll be with you at, 1:45 or so. Help yourself to whatever's in the fridge. We'll see you in a few. Just, don't go walking into the studio. And Cheryl made that and printed it out, gave it to me, had me, she's like, here, you can put this on the door to keep anybody from screwing with you. And I got here and I realized there's no scotch tape. And if you don't have any scotch tape, there's nothing that will take the place of scotch tape. Or so I thought. You think to yourself, I can't like paperclip this to the door because it's on the outside of a wooden door. I don't have any push pins. There's no stapler, as we've already learned. If you don't have scotch tape, it's not like I have any glue. We effectively have no office supplies. You know what I have?
But here you are. You are working with a woman, by the way, who most of my clothes are held together with like safety pins, and paper clips because I am the master at jimmying things together from things that are not supposed to be used for that purpose.
There we have a pair of scissors and a glue gun, which is empty. That's what we have. That's what I got office supply-wise. And we got a printer. And so Dawn says, just now, this is like 30 seconds before we go on the air. Dawn says, well, you know what you could put that on the door with? And I say, what? Holding the piece of paper in my hand. She says, well, you could just put that on the door with toothpaste. And I said, what do you mean? What do you mean I could put it on the door with toothpaste? She goes, well, you just stick some toothpaste on the door as though that's a thing that you have some experience with. And she said, then you can just stick the sign on the door using the toothpaste. I said, well, that's absurd. I can't. What am I? Am I a savage? I can't use toothpaste. And so what do I then find myself doing 15 seconds later? I find myself going and squeezing toothpaste onto my hand and then putting it on the door outside and then going and then sticking it. And I'll be goddamned if it didn't just stick to the door like it was put up there with rubber cement.
And we should remove that as soon as possible, though, after Kelly Clark gets here, though, because I think there is the slightest possibility that it could be corrosive on the finish of the door.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, we already took big divots out of this wall trying to put up the whiteboard. It was dry erase board. That we took like 17 different attempts to get it up there. So there's these huge like excavations of plaster missing. So it's going to be a glorious day. It's 503-505-6964. Also, it's going to be a glorious day because William Shatner has been recommended to me as a Facebook friend. I was on Facebook today. And it said,
the actual William Shatner, not a fan page, but Shatner?
The actual William Shatner. Wow. Well, it's like, you know, when you log into Facebook and it says you have X number of friend requests. And then it says, you have X number of friend recommendations. And the number of friend recommendations is always higher. You know, like I had like 15 or 16 friend requests. But it's like I got 85 friend recommendations. And I don't know how that works. I don't know. It's kind of a mystery, actually, now that I think about it. I don't know what the algorithm is where they determine, you know, because if you've got, like, I think I got like, what, 2,000 people or something on Facebook. So I got like 2,000 Facebook friends. But I don't have 2,000 friend recommendations. So my question is, how do they determine who is recommended to you as a friend on Facebook?
I think it's mutual friends. It's like if these are people that are friends of people that you are friends with. And then I think sometimes there's also a thing where if you friend someone, it'll say, hey, you want to recommend this person to your other friends too, I think. I don't know.
It must be the latter because it can't be the former. And I'll tell you why. Because because William Shatner was recommended to me even though we have only one friend in common. Because immediately I did the same thing you did. I said, is it the William Shatner? And I was thinking it was just some guy who had some I think William Shatner is awesome page. And so I went through there and it actually said like the official William Shatner page. And it was, you know, they come. And because he's doing this new documentary, it's about, you'll never guess, Star Trek. And so he's putting together this new film and he's got some new tech book that he's putting out, you know, like the Siege of Tech World or some crap. And so I'm looking at the William Shatner page, and then it says there at the bottom, it says, you have one friend in common with William Shatner. Who do you suppose the one friend in common is?
Aaron?
No, see, that's a good guess. You can be forgiven for guessing that, actually. You'll get it the next time around.
Bobby Roberts?
Oh, come on.
I don't know.
Yes, you do. Search your feelings. Look over at the computer screen.
Oh, Thomas Gill.
There you go. That's all I had to do was say computer screen, and you immediately knew who it was. Yes, Thomas Gill is my mutual friend with William Shatner. So now I'm totally going to... Because my thing about Facebook is it's a totally passive experience for me most of the time. I answer a lot of stuff on the page now way more than I used to because, you know, there's people trying to figure out how... You know, like, well, is it on iTunes or how do I subscribe or whatever? So I, you know, try to answer all that stuff so people know. But you know, like, I don't actively request that people be my friends on Facebook. It's not like I'm above it. It's just like that just becomes a whole job in and of itself. Searching out people that you want to be friends with and sending them requests and then seeing if they've, you know, and then their soul-crushing rejection when they say no or they ignore you or something. So I, you know, when requests come in, I say yes, but I just don't spend time going out and finding people to friend. I am actually going to actively friend William Shatner, because how can you not?
Well, good for you.
It's a thing you got to do.
There's something, and when you get that message in email that says that it's gone through, that they've approved you, there's something really kind of exciting about that, even though you know you're not really friends with them and they don't know who you are. But I've had a couple of those where it's like, I get the little message that says, you are now friends with Mary Jo Peel. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. You're no friends with Joe Bob Briggs.
It is
like, woohoo.
Well, it's affirmation of you as a person.
Yeah.
You know? It's that they view you as being worthy of their virtual friendship. All right. Well, in any event. It is 503-505-6964. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week coming up. And I did this one final thing here before we plunge on into this. And because I know you, this is that segment where supposedly we talk about what we did last night. And my thoughts.
I never get to share.
Well, my thoughts have gone a little skewed because I did this horrible thing. I left my Viso down in the car. And so now I'm trying to figure out if there is some segment coming up later on that will be of sufficient length for me to actually walk down to my car and get my Viso.
Why didn't you get it before the show? You could have run down
really quick. Because I was busy preparing magic for the people. Well, I was busy isolating.
People would have waited another like 90 seconds for you to go get your Viso.
I was busy getting a clip from Tommy Boy so that you might share in my enthusiasm for it, not knowing at the time that you had never seen that masterpiece of cinema. So that's fine. All right. Well, let's make a mental note, though, to catch up on what you did last night,
okay,
like at a later point in the program, because right now...
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Los Angeles sheriff's officials say Lindsay Lohan will likely spend about 2 weeks of her three-month sentence in jail. Department spokesman Steve Whitmore says Lohan is likely to be released on August 1st or 2nd. The projected release date reflects all of the credits Lohan is likely to receive. The department has said the actress was likely to serve a quarter of her sentence or less. She will also have to then serve 90 days, however, of her rehab thing. And there's no cutting corners on that. The judge has said, nope, that's 90 days.
Right, but I mean, but it's 90 days, but at the same time, it's 90 days of like of just bupkis, right? Because, you know, the rehab, if you're, it's not like she's going to work, not like she's going to live in like a tent in the desert or something where she's going to have to break rocks by the side of the road.
No, but if any, really, honestly, it's going to at least be more taxing than being in jail, because she's in a cell by herself. She is not going to have to interact with any of the other prisoners. She is going to eat separately. She's going to shower separately. If they let her out to exercise in the yard or whatever, it's going to be when she's entirely by herself. She's just being locked in a room for 2 weeks to teach her a lesson.
So she's basically it's like she's under house arrest at somebody else's house.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of what
it is. It's like, you know, we were listening to the clip earlier from The Insider, and actually you could probably play that now, saying everything she has to go without.
Let's see here. News. This is called...
Without.
Without.
She won't be allowed any cigarettes, and any smoker out there knows trying to make it 2 weeks without a puff is... Pretty hard to do.
It's hell.
Secondly, no makeup. For someone like Lindsay Lohan, that might be tough to do as well. Also, there won't be any hair extensions, accessories, things like that. And she will be wearing that orange jumpsuit that we saw in her mugshot for the next 2 weeks.
Now, this is exactly how my mind operates, because I'm not thinking about inequities in the legal system. I'm not thinking about the inequality that some people receive under our format of justice. I'm not thinking about the division between rich and poor or what this might say for her health. I'm actually not even thinking about how this affects her movie career. I want to know if she actually wears hair extensions. Here's the thing, and here's the reason I want to know that, because I am fascinated by people who go to jail and then have to ditch some form of the cosmetic or something that, some sort of augmentation to their appearance that they have grown accustomed to that they then cannot have.
Well, at the risk of sounding racist, and I really don't intend it this way, this is Los Angeles County Jail.
Uh-huh.
A large percentage of inmates in Los Angeles County Jail, as in every jail everywhere, are black. And black ladies often do love the hair extensions.
They have the weave.
I have a feeling that Chris Jacobs of The Insider just got a list of things inmates are not allowed to have, and then he was just reciting them.
Ma'am, your dashiki will have to stay outside. I'm sorry. There's just no...
So she's basically going to be locked in a room for 3 weeks. Like, oh, she can't wear makeup and she's got to wear an orange jumpsuit. She's not going to be seeing anyone. So who cares?
But in
rehab, she's going to have to go through, she's going to have to sit through group therapy every day.
But see, is that true when they talk about, you've been mm-hmm. in rehab, but I mean, you've been,
yeah.
How do I put this? You were in, okay, I don't even know actually. Now, were you in rehab and in some nut house for an eating disorder, or were they the same thing?
They were the same thing. I was in a program for an eating disorder, but it was, for all intents and purposes, exactly the same thing that you go through in rehab.
Was this eating too much or not eating at all?
I was what they call a compulsive overeater, which meant I was basically bulimic, but I couldn't make myself throw up. So I would binge eat, but I don't think
that's being bulimic. I think the defining characteristic of bulimia is the...
Actually, my therapist told me that I was far more of a bulimic personality than I was a compulsive overeater. The thing is, I can't believe I'm talking about this.
Yes,
I had tried on several occasions to make myself throw up.
You just couldn't do it?
I don't have a particularly sensitive gag reflex, so I just gave myself a really sore throat.
Wow.
Okay? God! Why am I talking about this? But anyway, yes, and so I ended up going into rehab, and I was in with people who were bulimic and people who were anorexic, and we were like on the next floor down from the alcoholics.
Okay, so you were like
addicts,
in one so separate wing, maybe of the same building.
Yeah, it was in a hospital.
All right. So you, for your group therapy, because my whole thing about the Lindsay Lohan is, you know, you always hear about rehab, the places that it's like jail, that there's, you know, your hardcore jail, and then there's your country club. And I always wonder if she's just going to end up going to some country club rehab place where it's not going to be a big deal, where it doesn't, you know, where she's being pampered.
And she might be. I mean, some of these places, like I understand Promises in Malibu, where most of the famous people go, is very fancy and the food is really good and they do get it nice. But at the same time, though, there are certain things that all of these programs have in common, which is they monitor your visitors. They monitor your phone calls if you're allowed to communicate with anyone. You have to sit through a certain amount of group therapy sessions,
generally
at least one every day. You have to do things like make your own bed and do like the chores and clean up after yourself, which a lot of these people haven't had to do for a very long time.
Which is sort of gratifying to me. Here's the thing that...
eat your food on a tray, you know, sitting at a table with everybody else.
I have this great idea for a show, and I know I say that a lot, but this really is a fantastic idea. My idea for a show is this. We have celebrity rehab, and then there's the celebrity fat club or fit club or whatever the hell it is. The one thing that really did resonate there before he was talking about the hair extensions and I got all sidetracked was when he said that she's not going to be allowed to smoke for 2 weeks. And I forget. Are you a smoker?
I'm an occasional smoker.
You're a social smoker.
I'm barely a smoker.
All right.
Interestingly enough, I became a smoker when I was
you
when in the
in
hospital.
Rehab?
Yeah, because cigarettes were the only thing that you were allowed that was some kind of a substance, because they realized that making people quit smoking while they were dealing with eating disorder and stuff was too much to bear.
Too much.
But we weren't allowed caffeine, and I went through the worst caffeine withdrawals. I had splitting headaches and was nauseous and sick as a dog, and the nurse explained to me that, oh yeah, that's caffeine withdrawals.
Oh, that would suck.
And so we weren't allowed any caffeine. We weren't allowed, you know, obviously any snack foods. We didn't eat sugar. We didn't, but they would let people smoke. So I actually took up smoking while I was in there because it was something that was allowed and I needed a vice.
Oh, I can tell you, you go to any 12-step meeting anywhere. And it's like, it doesn't matter, unless it is specifically for, and I don't think they have 12-step meetings for tobacco, for nicotine. They might, I guess. They have them for everything. But if you go to any 12-step meeting anywhere for anything, the two things that are, that are omnipresent are coffee and cigarettes, people smoking. And I don't know, I guess maybe you have to smoke outside or something now, but I mean, there's no...
Yeah, but they used to just... There was one I went to before they banned smoking in, like, all public health things, and it was when I was in this program, and they would ship us out to different, like, NA meetings and AA meetings and stuff to go to all these various 12-step meetings. And there was one that was in the basement of a hospital, and there was, like, no ventilation. It was in a room in the basement. And that thing, you'd walk in the door, and it was just, like, this smoky fog hanging about 3 feet up from the floor. It was just, it was a nightmare.
So I got the best idea for a show when he says that that she won't be allowed to smoke for 2 weeks. Instead of celebrity rehab, I just want to see a show called Celebrity Detox. And you know what? You don't even have to, there doesn't even have to be any additional casting that happens. I just want to put Daniel Baldwin, like, in a room and have a camera on him for 2 weeks and just say, and you're not going to get any heroin.
Well, he's just shivering and vomiting.
Seriously.
In a corner.
And just sitting there just chain puking and hallucinating spiders covering his eyeballs. That's it. I mean, wouldn't you watch that? If you want to talk about a thing, because they always say, well, you know, he's such, not Daniel Baldwin for obvious reasons, but they say, you know, so-and-so is an example for the young people. You know, what about children seeing this? You know what? I'll tell you what.
That would be a good example for the children.
You take Britney Spears and just show her losing control of her bowels, in a cell somewhere because she's being denied whatever drug it is she's trying to detox from. Because the thing is, it's not, like, rehab just sounds... Even to me, knowing a few folks who have gone through rehab, and sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not. But it doesn't sound all that hard. It sort of sounds. I mean, you've heard my fantasy about running away to rehab just instead of vacation. You know, for like 2 weeks, just fabricating an addiction just so I can go to a rehab center for a while. Detox, though, no one thinks detox sounds good. Detox sounds bad. It sounds like a thing you don't want because detox is withdrawal.
That's why Keith Richards reportedly would go to that place where they just put you in a medically induced coma And just, while they were like swapping out his blood that he didn't have to actually experience the detox symptoms.
I saw it was some episode of House where they there were two episodes of House. One where he, because the dealers that had Dr. House, House is a Vicodin addict because it's all part of the Sherlock Holmes thing where it's not opium, it's Vicodin. So he's a Vicodin addict and he made a bet with Cuddy that he could go a week without any Vicodin because she said he was an addict. And he said, an addict, you know, can't quit. He said, I can quit. And she said, okay, well, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a bet. And it doesn't matter what I forget what the parameters were, but he had to go a whole week without Vicodin. And I mean, first of all, Hugh Laurie is, you know, an amazing actor. And but they really, I don't know how exaggerated it was, if at all, but knowing just a few people who have gone through serious detox and withdrawal, I suspect that it was pretty close to the truth. There was actually one moment where he took what is that thing, the mortar and the pestle, where you grind stuff up?
Yeah.
What's the thing that you the phallic shaped thing, not the bowl, but the thing that you grind stuff with?
I believe that's the pestle.
The pestle, where there's a sequence in a house where he was actually going through such terrible withdrawal from Vicodin that he actually just picked up and just smashed his hand with the pestle, just to override the withdrawal with a stronger kind of pain. And I know people who have done things like that. There was also there was another episode where they did, though, refer to putting somebody in a coma just so she could survive, you know, ride out the detox from some kind of drug, because otherwise it would be so unbelievably bad. That sequence in
we're talking about drugs again.
It's what we do, and we have to do it before Kelly gets here because she might think we have a problem. That sequence,
and you don't want to look bad in front of Kelly.
No, because I've never done that before. I haven't ever looked retarded in front of Kelly Clark like 500 or 600 times. That sequence in Ed Wood where they show Bela Lugosi and he's all tied down to the bed. Indeed, I mean, it's just that if they had a celebrity detox, and they could even do it as like, look, you can either go to jail, for a year or whatever, or you can detox on television for 3 weeks. You choose now, and just give somebody the option. All right. That's a long time talking about Lindsay Lohan, about whom I really don't care all that much. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
A Tea Party caucus is officially formed today in the U.S. House of Representatives. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann says she's not trying to take control of the Tea Party, nor does she necessarily approve of everything being done in the movement.
But she is a crazy woman. Michelle Bachmann, and I don't mean crazy like I disagree with her policies or we have ideological differences. I mean, she's just flat out screaming nuts. She's like every psycho girlfriend you ever were glad you dumped. Do you know what I'm talking about, Michelle Bachmann? And she's got like the crazy Botox face where like nothing moves.
Yes.
And she looks like that guy that you would always see in the Guinness Book of World Records. And I think he's on the cover of the Exile on Main Street album where his eyes were able to pop out of his head. Her eyes look like they are about to fall into her lap, like they need to be scotch taped into her face somehow.
Well, you have a little bit of sound there. Vouching.
Vouching. I give you crazy woman Michelle Bachmann.
We are also not here to vouch for the Tea Party or to vouch for any Tea Party organizations or to vouch for any individual people or actions or billboards or signs or anything of the Tea Party.
Is this a disclaimer of some kind?
Yeah, but we're giving them a voice, you know, in government.
Yeah, she is. She at times looks as though she has a secret set of metal jaws lurking inside that are about to come out and just snatch children off the street. I remember seeing her on, it was on Anderson Cooper or Hardball or one of those shows, and there were three people on the screen. There was James Carville. There was it was like Jerry Spence or somebody. It was the guy with the buckskin, the leather jacket or whatever. I think it was Jerry Spence. And then Michelle Bachmann. And all three of them look flat out crazy in different ways. Jerry Spence looks like he's on his way to some sort of a costume party half the time. James Carville looks like Serpentor from G.I. Joe. And Michelle Bachmann, managed to look crazier than both of them. And I actually freeze framed it on the TiVo. And I said, honey, will you come in here? Which one of these people looks the craziest? And she went right for Michelle Bachmann. It was like the center square. And I mean, if you are sitting next to James Carville, James Carville looks like the cover of the Iron Maiden Peace of Mind album, where he's just a skull with blackened eyes.
And he's gleefully crazy, too.
And he like grabs the crazy with both hands and embraces it like a puppy. And yet she still managed to look flat out nuts compared to that guy. So I'm glad she's around.
Well, I'm just immature enough that I'm delighted by this next sentence here, which says, the Republican says she's excited by the movement.
That's fantastic. Is this
excited?
Excited. Let's see here. I don't believe I have a cut called excited.
It says so here on the paper that you gave me.
You're just making that up. You're trafficking in lies.
No, really, it's right here.
All right. Well, let me see here. I might have it right here.
You
hold on
gave
a second.
It to me.
Just get off my back. Excited. No, sadly, I don't believe I. I don't believe I have.
Well,
that.
We can
sorry.
Just imagine that she says she's excited by the Tea Party.
Yes,
movement.
I'm sorry. Well, I'll see if I can dig that up. There you go, yeah. Crazy Lady Michelle Bachman. Let's get one of our watches.
Let's do.
Done here, and then we'll take a break, and we'll talk to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week.
Let's do our corpse watch.
All right, ladies and gentlefolk, here is your corpse watch for Wednesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up home. That's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is your corpse watch for Wednesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Two Hermiston residents are charged with abuse of a corpse after leaving a man's body in a van for four nights. Matthew Eastwood, 52, was found mid-morning on Tuesday in a van parked behind an Hermiston area restaurant, said Umatilla County District Attorney Dan Gushwa. Eastwood apparently died Friday at the home of Ronnie Edward Walls, 60, and Erica Lynn Powell, 39. Investigators with the Umatilla County Sheriff's Office and the county's major crime team allege that after Eastwood died, Walls and Powell put him in a van and left it parked behind the restaurant on Friday night. Walls and Powell were arrested Tuesday and booked into a Umatilla County jail. Eastwood's death remains under investigation. An autopsy is scheduled for
God
today.
Damn, you want to talk about one of the worst places on earth, and that place is Hermiston. Have you ever spent any time in Hermiston?
I just know that watermelons come from there.
It's a bad, bad place. I mean, it is. I forget who it was that said this about a place called Herman, Maine. Oh, it was Stephen King. He talked about it being the a-hole of the universe. And then when the people of Herman were annoyed, he said, well, maybe no more than the armpit. Have no doubt that Hermiston is, I don't know what hole it is, but it's a hole out of which something unpleasant comes or into which something unpleasant goes.
I imagine because in my mind, because the watermelons come from there, I always think of it as being sort of flat and like hot and unpleasant, sort of in like the equivalent of in California, the whole Bakersfield, Fresno area.
It is a lot like Bakersfield, actually. It's funny you say that. It is not a dissimilar place. And especially because it's in the shadow of Umatilla, which is dominated by a plant where they burn chemical weapons. Mm. So where they just decide, you know, bring your mustard gas here. And it's just acres and acres of just a real big empty. It's just a whole lot of nothing where there's just scrub grass and I think endless fields of ragweed, which appear to be their big cash crop.
Yeah, this is actually the second story in a week of people who don't seem to know what to do with a dead body, because there was one just a couple of days ago, too, of a trucker who had given a ride to a woman, which I'm thinking hooker, but it might not necessarily been. And for some reason, she died while she was in his truck. And so he just drove around with her for a while, dead in the truck, not knowing what to do. And then finally, I think he put her in a dumpster at a truck stop.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
I think he had her for like a day or so, not knowing what to do with her.
Okay, here's the other thing. Here's another great idea for a television show. It has nothing to do with the violation of corpses, like, as such. I have said for the longest time that there needs to be some sort of a reality show meet fantasy camp. Where what they do is they take people and, you would pay a certain amount of money to do this, and they let you recreate sequences from your favorite action films. For example, they put you in an elevator shaft, Die Hard style, and then you got to climb out the thing on the roof and then shimmy up the cable and then, you know, get to the 12th floor or the whatever. And then at the end, you would win something. So they ought to do some horrible variation on that where they stick you in an awful situation like you would find yourself in a movie like Very Bad Things, where suddenly, dead hooker on the carpet, what are we going to do? And they would give you some anatomically correct representation of the dead hooker, and they would say, look, and the thing is, and a room spattered with blood, and they would say, the cops are going to be here in 90 minutes. You must leave no trace of the dead hooker. She has to be totally gone. And then you and your team would be competing against another team that was trying to get rid of another dead hooker. And it would be like whoever got rid of the dead hooker most effectively within 90 minutes, bam, you win the prize. Tell me you wouldn't watch
that. I would totally watch. I would even try out for that.
I'd compete to be on that show. I would absolutely do that. But they put you in horrible situations, And you have to extricate yourself from said situation in like an hour and a half before like the man shows up. Here's another thing. I'm a genius. Let's hear it for me.
Yay.
Thank you. Or they would give you the Pulp Fiction thing where you just got the, you just got the, what is it, Julius? Is that his name?
No.
Who's the guy that they shoot in the face? I just shot so-and-so in the face.
I can't remember. That's driving me crazy.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
But were they having to pick up itty-bitty pieces of skull out of the back of a car? Where they just give you a car that is just filled with blood and itty-bitty pieces of skull. And they say, look, Bonnie's going to be home in an hour and a half, clean. Right there. And there's, you know, and then there's, you know, and then you're competing against some other guys and some
other
garage.
Or you're like the burglar who has broken into the house, but you end up locked in because the burglar alarm goes off and like the doors all lock and you got to figure out how to get out of the house and hopefully maybe even like get out with the loot
before the
police arrive.
And you must extricate yourself from a sticky situation, movie style, with the clock running and the cameras on.
I like it.
I'm telling you right now, everybody heard me say that, by the way. And that was 153 on July 21st, 2010.
Sarah and Greg actually even had to do something like that when they locked themselves on the roof, which is a classic TV and movie trope.
I wonder if they stopped to reminisce about all the great times they've had, you know, in the studio. Remember that time last week when we moved in? All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Speaking of situation, I still haven't solved this visa situation. I don't believe this next break is going to be long enough. I'm just going to power through with no caffeine.
You could play the Pop Culture Authority.
Yeah, but it's only like 2 minutes long.
You could play a song.
This is like it's like I'm living through my own idea for celebrity detox. You know what I mean?
You could give me one of the books from the pile of prizes. I could just read something aloud while you're gone.
No, I'll play through the pain. I'm a professional. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here in the Emerson News Network. Coming up next, Dawn Taylor from Willamette Week will be here. We got today's top.
No.
What?
I believe you mean Kelly Clark.
What did I say?
You said Dawn Taylor
from
Willamette
Week. You will be here from the news desk. She'll be here from Willamette Week.
Okay.
We've also got the top five. See, that's the lack of caffeine. Right now, it's cognitive function is the first thing to go.
There is an extra Coke Zero.
But there's no caffeine to speak of in Coke. I mean, that's just... and there's no cocaine in there anymore either. Yeah. I mean, so what were you drinking it for? The taste? No.
I enjoy the Coke Zero. Thank you very much.
Moving forward, we'll have the top five songs I always seem to be hearing at a Winco, and we have Pop Culture Authority happening right now. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Show on the Emerson News Network.
Where does the name Cujo come from?
From the Emerson News Network. This is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Rick Emerson. Cujo. It's a name which comes freighted with menace. One which, in the seeming blink of an eye, went from being almost totally unknown to being eternally and inextricably linked with what was termed, quote, a sleeping evil crueler than death itself, end quote. The name Cujo was popularized, though that might be the wrong word, by the Stephen King novel of the same name in 1982. The novel Cujo, which largely takes place in a broken-down car over a series of sweltering hot days, is one of King's darkest novels, taking readers on a roller coaster ride that ends in a sort of bleak, abysmal plunge. And that name, Cujo, sounding Italian or Spanish or Indian or altogether unworldly, from where did that come? Now, the answer is just as compelling as the novel itself. Stephen King says the name comes from William Wolfe. And while you may not know the name William Wolfe, you know the deeds of the man. William Wolfe, you see, was a key member of the Symbionese Liberation Army, the SLA, and one of the men responsible for Patty Hearst's kidnapping. The members of the SLA all had code names. Patty Hearst's was Tanya. Other code names were Yolanda, Zoya, and William Wolfe's code name was Cujo. So, yes, the dog who held a woman and her child hostage was named after a man who held a woman hostage. A man named Wolfe, alias Cujo. This, by the way, is one of the few things King does recall about the novel Cujo. In his memoir, On Writing, he refers to it as a novel he, quote, barely remembers writing at all, end quote. It was written when King was in the depths of his addiction to alcohol. King also says that he likes the book and wishes he could remember enjoying the good parts as he put them down on the page.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Is it just the most sad, pathetic thing just happened? And fortunately, there were witnesses to it, as there always seemed to be. Let's also, by the way, overlook the fact that I'm winded from going up like seven stairs. All right. Just trying to center myself here. So, you know, that whole thing about, no, I'm going to play through the pain. I'm going to power through it. I'm a professional. I'm not going to be, I will not be beholden to a chemical. That lasted until we went into the break just now. We started the Pop Culture Authority. And I actually told Dawn, I said, hey, I need you to come over here and start this Robbie Williams song as soon as the Pop Culture Authority is done. I need to run to my car. And so Kelly Clark, who will join the program here in just a moment, was actually sitting in the kitchen. And normally I do this whole, come on in, here's our studio, here's your headphones, here's the microphone, whatever. No, no, no. I just dispensed with all of that and immediately was like, hi, Kelly, get in the studio. Donald, let's sit you down. I got to go to the car. And I ran down and then realized I'd forgotten my car keys. And so it just became this panoply of errors where I was then running back up here so I could get my car keys, so I could go back down the same seven stairs to go out onto the sidewalk, to sprint to my car to, in fact, get a half-empty warm can of Viso. That is really the extent to which I am unable to function unless, you know, I get, like, my caffeine infusion on. So all of this lends credence to the idea that my celebrity detox show is a genius concept that really would be, because, you know, if you just stuck Lindsay Lohan in, you know, in a small concrete room and said, look, you're just not going to get any junk for like 72 hours and there's going to be a camera on you. Try not to lose control of your sphincter, you know, because you're going to be on television. It's like a 50 share right there.
See, or an episode where you are locked in a room with a glass-fronted fridge, like the enormous one we have there, and it's full of Viso. And yet it's locked, and you can't get into it. And it's like, just nothing but us watching you try to get at the Viso.
It would be like that dream I have where I'm at a radio studio and the phone lines are all blinking, but I press them, but they won't answer. They won't pick up, which is the dream I always have, by the way. That is every radio person I've ever known, and I'm sure that every industry has their own variation on this recurring dream. I think Sarah used to have a dream where, like, there's a record, the song is ending and she's outside and the door is shut and she can't quite get into the studio to segue to the next song. Mine is always that I am sitting in a studio and I'm looking down at the phone lines and they are all blinking and I press them with my finger and they can't be answered. There's people there desperate to talk to me and I cannot, in fact, interact with them. Which is, you know. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? It is the Rick Emerson radio program. You can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Wednesday afternoon.
Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is going to pay for protection against wolves. A number of surgical instruments used to embalm Elvis Presley are going to be going up for auction.
Fantastic.
And Sarah Palin has no idea how big things are.
Excellent. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program from Willamette Week, Ms. Kelly Clark, the arts and culture editor. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I love what you've done with your hair.
Why, thank you.
See?
It's longer.
No, that's not true. It's a darker color, isn't it?
No, but I'm glad that you're noticing things like hair at all.
Has it not
in
been?
In your caffeine junkiness, I mean, I'm surprised that you can even focus on singular object.
Seriously, never mind. I was just going to say, as much as one thinks that one is not recreating the behavior pattern set by one's parents, okay, like, do you ever do this? Did you ever just answer the phone and you hear yourself answering the phone like your mom or your dad did? You know, or you say something and you use like my dad would do this thing when he would answer, and it drove me bats when I was a kid, where he would answer the phone and he would say, instead of hello, he would just say yellow, like with a really pronounced Y sound. And every now and again, especially as I get older for some reason, I will actually hear myself saying that when I answer the phone. And then you have that sort of shudder of revulsion and self-loathing. When I was around 12 and my mom was still heavily Catholic, and, you know, Catholics do the thing during Lent where you have to give something up for 40 days. And my mom one year decided to give up coffee. She gave up caffeine. And I will actually give it to her as a testament to her willpower that she made it all the way through. But goddamn, it was just the worst. It was worse than when she went through menopause. It was the worst 40 days of my childhood, because at any given moment, I mean, she was seconds away from going all like Crawford on us. It was bad. It was a bad scene. And, you know, and you like to think you're a different person. Then you find yourself sprinting down the street while telling Dawn, press the button when it ends, for the love of God.
By the way, I colored my hair last night. He didn't notice. He never said a word.
Your hair looks very nice,
Thank
Dawn.
You very much.
All right, yeah,
it's got like sort of like a reddish hue to it.
It does.
It's fiery.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. But thank you for the compliments all around.
Well, that's what I do. So this is the first time you've been here to the studio,
To the
right?
new digs. I'm here. I'm so excited. There's piping. There's pipe and drape.
There is
a lot of pipe and drape.
It sort of progresses in stages here. As I was saying this right before we came back on, there was this one day. There was, maybe a 14 or 16-hour period where we had put up all the soundproofing, we put up all the curtaining on the walls, and then it was clean and it was tidy, and then that lasted, I think, until about 2 o'clock the next afternoon. And then this massive refrigerator arrived, which is, you might notice, sits in the... Greg and Sarah obtained this from one of their fine sponsors.
I'm really not surprised that it came from them.
And it is full of beer, but the other thing is, as Dawn pointed out, the beer is actually warm because the freezer, the refrigerator is not plugged in, because when you plug it in, it starts to smoke and it puts out a burning noise, and also it goes really loudly in the background.
Thank you, sponsor.
And it lists like 30 degrees to starboard. Not that it's not a fine cooling implement from whoever that sponsor might be.
And I'm sure it would be if it actually was turned on and was keeping things cool. It's really just a big metal box now with warm beer in it.
I like to think of it as a shelf and an art piece.
It's a
that says that, you know, Rick and Dawn know how to liven a place up. They don't want to be in a big black box. They want to be in a big black box with a silver box that's smaller in the corner of it.
Well, Dawn had the idea that we got to fill it with pies like a Sizzler, you know, and just have it, or like a Marie Callender sort of place, just have it sort of rotating in the background.
I just always think a refrigerator full of pies is a good idea, though.
Well,
I kind of agree.
It's never a bad time.
You need a pie sponsor.
Pies in a fridge.
We do.
Pie
Can we
sponsor.
Get a pie sponsor?
I'll help you with that.
We get like Whiffy pies or something to.
I bet Greg would do it from Whiffy's.
Is that the food cart place?
He is the king. Yes, he is the king of food carts.
Boy, you know, let me just say this, at the risk of sounding like every guy whose favorite band gets a major label deal. The problem with that food cart place on 14th and Hawthorne is now it is so impossibly crowded, I am never actually able to go there and just sort of swing on in and get something, which used to be, and there is no longer anywhere to sit, which used to be the case, I think, only on like Fridays or Saturdays. But I cannot remember the last time I went there and it was actually, I'm not saying they're a victim of their own success because they're obviously doing really well,
mm-hmm.
but...
You're a victim of their success.
That's the
back
thing, is
in my day, back in last summer.
Rick Emerson.
Spend all day there.
Rick Emerson and his needs and wants are victims of their success.
Maybe we should just make a Rick Emerson pod that's only open when you want to go to it and then not open for anybody else.
I got to tell you, there are worse ideas. Elvis Presley used to do this, speaking of Elvis, where when he wanted to go to a movie, he would actually just... Elvis Presley at one point actually bought a theater. I don't mean like he bought all the seats. He would do that typically. He would just say like, I want to see a movie. And they would go and they would just say like, how many does it hold? And they'd say 150 people. And they'd say, I'll take 150 tickets, because he wanted to just go and sit in the theater by himself. He at one point actually did purchase the actual structure. He just bought a theater because he couldn't ever seem to go there and find sufficient privacy. So it's not like I'm opposed to that idea.
We could almost fit a food cart in the corner in the same amount of space that fridge takes
in
up.
Fridge.
My only other observation about the food carts, and don't get me wrong, they really are great, and it's about like that the Potato Champion place continues to be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
There's that, I forget the guy's name, at the food cart section, the pod or whatever it's called, at 14th and Hawthorne, there is also a guy in one of the little trailer things who has like a sort of Cajun catfish sandwich poor boy kind of a thing going on.
Yeah, he may not be there anymore, but I know the one that sold the turkey legs, the deep fried turkey legs.
I don't know.
A different guy?
I'm not.
I
really
love that
sure.
There's a guy who sells po' boys and deep fried turkey legs.
He was in the
same pod.
He was right up against the wall of Tiny's Coffee, which is right there. But he had the greatest story where he was like a software engineer, and he said that the company that was employing him laid him off, and he said it was a bad time to be a software engineer. And he said, but I've always liked sandwiches. And so, like, there he was, which is sort of awesome.
Well, that's what's really funny. You know, Podna's Barbecue, which everybody kind of says is the best barbecue in town, which it really is. The guy who started that, this happened, he started a cart called Low Barbecue, Laid Off Workers Barbecue. And this was 6-7 years ago before carts had started to get big. That's where Podna's Barbecue came from in the first place. So in 2 or 3 years, you're going to see a lot of these carts, I think, turn into little restaurants, which is great.
Well, that was we were talking about this the other day about whether... whether they will eventually they will sort of transmogrify into real brick-and-mortar restaurants, or whether whether they're not going to be sustainable over the long run. In other words, whether the recession that made them possible will somehow make them non-feasible because they'll reach some critical mass where they just cannot, the industry can't support it.
Well, you know, carts are great because they're not a huge commitment. You can just go grab lunch. You can go grab a fried pie and then leave, and it's no big deal. You don't have to spend a lot of money. But if you've noticed, there's favorites, and there's favorites for a reason. Good food wins out in the carts, and people are not shy about supporting it because they feel like they're supporting the little guy. They're supporting, like, a little, you know, sort of underground sensation. And I think that the carts aren't going to go anywhere. They are a perfect way for somebody to showcase a food that they love with really low startup cost. I'd say if they transition to restaurants, a lot of them will fail because it doesn't matter how good your food is when you have a staff to pay, when you have bills to pay, when you have rent or you have a mortgage. You know, those are a lot of other factors to deal with. That said, I think some of them will make the transition. Speaking of this, though, Do you know, you may not know this. Do you know who won Best Food Cart in Portland?
I know this.
On our Willamette Week Best of Portland Readers Poll.
I was actually just about to segue into the Best of Portland issue. So Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, who won Best Food Cart from the Willamette Week Readers Poll?
That would be Big Ass Sandwiches.
Excellent. Fantastic. And I did not know that, but as soon as there was something in your inflection and the overt giddiness that was displayed on Dawn's face when you said that.
Yes. Because they not only are they a friend to, I understand they also have excellent cookies.
That's right. I forgot that you supplied their cookies to
yes.
them.
I make their cookies.
Let me tell you this.
I have not had the cookies, but I've had your cookies before. So, hot damn. Wow.
Okay.
That's too much goodness in one small cart.
All right. This is the phrase
yes,
I've had
Kelly
Dawn's
Clark has
cookies.
Had my cookies.
No, this is like the thing you said last hour about having no gag reflex. So I actually did not know that because I meant to pick up a copy of this or look it up online because I knew you were going to be on the show today.
Sure.
But with all of my rampant
caffeine
craziness,
junkie,
didn't really happen.
Jumping.
But I'm sort of glad I didn't know because I like being legitimately surprised by that. So that is fantastic. So if you guys don't know, and this is not paid plug or anything. It's a fantastic place. It is called Big Ass Sandwiches, and I'm terrible with cross streets, so I actually don't know.
Third and Ash.
Third and Ash.
It's right next to Captain Ankeny's Pizza across from it. So, if you're down by Burbati's, you can smell it from right there.
Yeah, it's right across the Ash Street Saloon.
It is just, our friends Lisa and her husband Brian run that place. Lisa Wood, who I had worked with at KUFO and who was in the great off-laying of 2009, sort of broomed on out and they looked at each other and they said, well, what should we do? And, you know, he has a lot of experience, in restaurants and as a chef. And, and it's not that I didn't think it would be great, but it's just one of those things where, it's like the guy you always meet who's like working on a script.
Sure.
You know, or some guy's like, oh, no, some friends and I, I'm making a little indie film. And you say, well, okay, A, so is everybody. And B, it just being good, sadly, is not enough. There's a lot of things that have to come together. And I was really rooting for those guys. But, restaurants, even a small restaurant, like the failure rate is so high. The odds are just stacked against you. And I was just thinking to myself, I hope those crazy kids make it, And then they didn't. Not only did they make it, but I mean, it's just a huge success. And the first time
they continue to sell out regularly.
Well, because that food is like, it's I feel like, you know what it is? I feel like I'm an Israelite waking up and the ground is covered with manna, except the manna is bacon. And I know that's a horrible thing to say when I'm talking about Israelites, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
The last time I wrote about them, I said that their sandwiches were snuggies for your stomach. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and about Big Ass Sandwich, if you want to stack the deck in your favor, make the ultimate drunk food. I mean, take things that everybody loves and shoves them together. I mean, a roast beef sandwich, really good French fries, and then secret aardvark sauce.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, that is just the element that locks it together for me.
It really,
and you know what? It's not for everybody. I mean, some people they're too heavy for, but for the average Portlander who has no problem, eating their own weight, a sandwich that looks like sandwich that looks like a small puppy. Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing that Portlanders love.
That would be me, by the way, because my wife had gone there. Lara had gone there a couple times after a night of imbibing adult beverages with her friends, and they had gone there, and it was one of those things I kept meaning to do. But it was like, by the time I would think about it, and I was on unemployed time, too. So it was like I get up at like 2, get dressed at 3, finish buttoning my pants at 3:30. And, like, well, I should, rush hour. Crap. But when I finally went there, Lara was giving me the whole thing on the way there. She's like, no, you're not going to be able to eat the whole thing. Like, she's like, it takes me a day and a half. And they gave it to me, and it was like I just unhinged my jaw like Jane Badler in V and just sort of and just shoved the whole thing in, and it was fantastic. So anyway, we'll have to get those guys on to have them talk about it because that is so good for them. And so Lisa, Brian, congratulations. I mean, it really is wonderful. Best of Portland issue out now,
out today.
Any other big surprises, upsets, shocks?
Well, you know, the Best of Portland Readers Poll is just a small part of what we do. And the reason is that we love our readers. They're amazing. And obviously, they have good taste. They picked big-ass sandwiches. But sometimes, you know, you ask them questions like, who's the best band? Well, Floater has been the best band for the last 6 years. You know, it's not the most eclectic mix of things when you ask your readers what's the best in town.
They know what they like and they stick with what they want.
So even I think maybe 15, 16 years ago, we flipped it that the Best of Portland for us is really, we find the weirdest ass shit, you know, the whole entire year. Wait, can I say that? I'm sorry.
You know, this is
that may be the first profanity.
No,
it's
the second, actually. Dan Hanico said it too.
Okay, see, what is your policy? I haven't even asked you guys yet.
And that's my fault, actually, because if I hadn't been sprinting down the stairs to get a lukewarm can of visa for my car, I'd say, it's not like there's a federal agency that's gonna fine you. Our thing is actually, somebody asked me a couple weeks ago. They said, "Well, I've noticed that you don't, you know, even though you're doing that in the netcast," they said, "I don't know if you don't use any profanity." And there's two things at play there. One, just real quickly, one is that I think I am physically incapable of swearing when I'm behind a microphone at this point in my life.
Well, my face just tightened up after I did it, so now I feel bad.
It's just because I think it's like a Pavlovian thing. I've just spent so many years thinking, $325,000 fine. The other thing is that we have a lot of people who listen to the show at work or at their place of business, and we've heard a lot of people say, you know, that they have to make sure they listen to stuff that's not going to get them in trouble. So we just operate as though we were still doing the radio thing. Not a big deal. It's not
but
like
you
you're
can
get...
you can use profanity. We just choose not
we
to.
We opt not to. It's not you're not allowed to. But I'm
off the air. It's like sailors.
I'm just a tight ass. There's just no way to get around it there. So, all right.
Okay. And on that note, I'll go back to talking about Best of Portland.
No, it's not like you're going to get a flogging or something. I'm just saying.
You know, maybe you should flog people who, I mean, because that could be a little bit more interesting. It'll break the ice in case they swear again.
It's one of those things that normally I tell people, you know, so not a big deal. No, you're not the first person
to
do
Dan.
It.
Okay.
No, the actually, the first guy to do it, though, was Dan Hanico from Powell's, who is... You know, who doesn't seem like a guy who's going to swear. And
I don't think I even noticed when he did.
Oh, I know I noticed because
I have to actually physically get ready to go on your guys' show because it takes me at least 10 minutes to get the truck driver out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, it is so tough for me to do as long to go this long without
George Michael has the same problem.
Thank you. Yeah. without saying something pretty horrific. So, okay, Best of Portland, though?
Yes, yeah, Best of Portland.
So basically, the rest of the year, I don't know if you know this about Willamette Week, but we tend to write somewhat negative stories, muckraking, that type of thing. And all year long, you know, we have something that's really cute or really nice or really warm and fuzzy about the city, but there's no real reason to write about it right then, or it's not the most pressing news when, you know, somebody's doing some skullduggery. You know, why are you going to write about a therapy llama? I mean, it's just lame. So Best of Portland is our chance once a year to just be unabashedly sappy and warm and happy and just like a giant, ridiculous, probably inappropriate hug for all the things we love in Portland.
It's a big, I was just going to say, it's a big, warm, loving embrace for the city in which you reside.
Pretty much.
The therapy llama.
The therapy llama is a big one this year. People seem amazed by this.
I tried to get the therapy llama on Outlook Portland.
He's got a very busy schedule.
My people talk to his people, but it was. It sounds like I'm just speaking gibberish here. But the therapy llama is one of the things that Dove Lewis has. Dove Lewis, they recruit and they train, and they get therapy animals for people who have PTSD or like the cancer kids up at the Dornbecker. You know, where they'll bring in animals that are sort of comforting or soothing, or if people have been abused or whatever. And usually it's dogs, occasionally cats, sometimes a bunny. But they have, I believe, a therapy goat. They have a therapy. There was a third thing. There was a therapy goat. There was a therapy. It was something crazy. It was like a woodchuck or something. It didn't make any sense at all.
That would not make me feel better
at
all.
Don't llamas spit?
No, camel spit. Apparently llamas don't spit. Rojo is a very well-mannered Rojo, the therapy llama. I feel like it should be like a jingle, like Rojo, the therapy llama.
It would be like getting its own spin-off or something from.
It's going to be on Nickelodeon. It's
he should
be awesome.
Have a puppet.
That's me.
Hannah Montana should write him. It'll be great.
Did you get to meet the therapy llama?
You know, I met the therapy llama, but not involving Willamette Week. I was down near Jameson Square one day. I think I was at Cool Moon Ice Cream, which is, as I've probably said before, is one of my favorite places. And I turned around and I saw this fuzzy thing and I couldn't figure out what it was. Oh, and it was a llama walking around Jameson Square. And I was totally confused what was going on.
Just doing
and so
some
I
afternoon
ran,
shopping?
Yeah, so or? I like ran around and found it. And it's, I mean, it's bigger. I mean, it's almost as big as a horse. And it's got big, long eyelashes. And honestly, like, I'm pretty sure man or woman, it turns you into, like, a six-year-old girl as soon as you see it.
Did you just, oh, it's the cutest
fluffy,
little llama.
It's so cute. You know, and then you pet it. It's all soft. And they're like, this is Rojo, the therapy llama. I'm like, therapy, yeah, okay.
Then what is it? What's
he
it?
Makes you feel better by petting him.
Then what is an alpaca? I don't know what an alpaca is. Three things that I used to get confused. Now it's down to two. I used to get alpaca, llama, and emu. Confused, but an emu is like a bird.
A
that's
bird.
Like an ostrich or
yeah.
something. Okay, there's a llama and then there's an alpaca. And
alpaca is to a llama as emu is to ostrich.
So it is similar to but different than a
yes.
llama.
They have different hair, which, yeah, it's softer.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So
I have also pet an alpaca, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing they make sweaters out of, right? And they made
it
the.
It was a pre-sweater, yeah.
All right. So a llama is the size of a horse?
It's a little bit smaller than a horse. I think we wrote in there that it's larger than a Great Dane, smaller than a horse. But really, right. It's almost the size of a horse. It's big.
Fantastic.
And it's like a reddish color. I mean.
Hence the name. Rojo.
Rojo. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's really cute. I mean, this is coming from me and
oh, no,
I'm
don't.
Dorky, but.
No, I have no. No. Have you? I mean, really, I took advantage of trillion-dollar technology, which is the internet, a while back on the show, just so I could post a picture of my dog during the program. Because I had sent a picture of him to Dawn, and Dawn had observed what a unique looking animal he is.
I want to see your dog. I didn't even know you had a dog. I knew you had like a.
I have two dogs.
You had a spiny thing. Or
I had I had some hedgehogs.
Yeah, find that retarded picture of your dog.
I had a. It's true. What are you going to do? I had a series of hedgehogs actually.
Yeah.
But their lifespan is really short, and they're susceptible to disease. And then it was all just very sad. And then I was just like a blubbering guy at the vet, you know, with my deceased hedgehog, and just going home and being sad. And it was all very. And then they die of this thing, hedgehogs, which they really are fantastic pets. I had an African pygmy hedgehog, a couple of them actually in a row, and they die of. They are impervious to almost everything. For reasons that I think are only sort of dimly understood, that they're not, you know, toxins and whatever don't affect mm-hmm. them. They don't get most diseases, but there is a very specific disease, which, as I always note, even the disease that kills them is adorable. They die of wobbly hedgehog syndrome.
You're kidding me.
No, and it's like a Lou Gehrig's disease of the hedgehog world.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's
so,
the most horrible thing.
It is. No, it's complete. It's like, oh, who's got wobbly hedgehogs? Who's got atrophied muscles?
Okay, are you ready for this dog photo? Because I was not.
So, yeah, this is my dog, Philo.
Oh, my God.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
That's Hades.
Yeah, so that's my that
he
is my
like
dog.
He looks like a Muppet.
He said, oh,
looks
I...
like a Jim Henson reject.
He said, you want to see a cute picture of my dog? And then he shows me this. And
that's the cute picture.
Yeah, it's...
Well, see, I'm sorry. I own a very handsome dog.
No.
I have a different...
Here's the thing. I am under no illusions. I am under no illusions that Philo is a normal-looking dog. As we always say,
of course you named him Philo.
You know, he is made up of. I mean, he's made up of spare parts
he's
of
staring at me now.
From other dogs. He has got. I keep meaning to. I keep meaning to get a full body photo of him, and here's why.
He has a lazy eye.
You It's like they just went into some sort of a mannequin factory, you know, or whatever, or just like. You know, it's like some sort of a leftover bin for canines, and they went, I don't know, we got a head and the somebody have a leg, doesn't matter what kind, and stuck them all together. He is, I don't know, he's I don't know, maybe a foot and a half high, something like that. But he's got these legs, he's got like these long, tiny stick legs. They are no bigger around than these microphone stands, and he is immensely tall. He can actually stand above our other dog Max without touching him. What kind of dog do you suppose he is based on what the, you know, his appearance? What do you suppose the paperwork for him claimed he was?
I thought he was like a terrier poodle kind of mix.
Yeah, I'm seeing some kind of terrier or, and maybe Shih Tzu or
Falcor.
Poodle.
Okay, and again, keeping in mind.
He's got the kind of a curly poodle-y kind of a coat from the neck down, but kind of a terrier Shih Tzu kind of a head thing.
And keeping in mind that he's got incredibly long stick legs. Do you have any sort of a
giraffe?
Your final guess is like a sort of a terrier
bird
thing? Yeah, if you look at his paperwork, which I'm going to...
He has paperwork?
We got... strangely enough, he'd been abandoned, so we got him into shelter. We got him at the shelter, and the paperwork for him actually said... They had to abandon. I mean, the people came by, and they said, like, he's our dog, but no. You take it. And he is identified, I swear to Christ, as being a dachshund. That's what it says. It has his name, it has his picture, and then it says dachshund on it. I mean, that's what they claim he is. Since I'm just being this guy, I might as well just continue to be this guy. And I will find a picture of my other dog to show you.
We should talk about the Willamette Week Festival.
I was, but you know.
Well, there's a dog in here. But
I think we got distracted by something else. But in any event.
There's a dog right there.
I know. I want to know about the dog.
All right,
that
just
picture.
Incidentally. So those are the two dogs.
Oh, my God.
So this is my other dog. And
they
this
look
is,
like a calendar. They look like a... Yeah. So sorry your dad died.
Yeah. So, you know, so I got the one dog that looks like he, you know, came off of a, he looks like he came off some sort of a greeting card. And then I got the, you know, and they've got Philo, who's just made of spare bits and pieces. But, all right.
Well, they look like very fine dogs. I'm sure my dog would help them at the park.
He's got a great personality. He looks retarded. I have no illusions about that.
Yeah.
There's no getting around that fact.
So tell
what
about this dog?
Note,
tell us
though.
About this dog here.
We only have one dog in the Best of Portland this year, and it's the busiest guard dog, and it is a tiny, fat, lame, wobbly terrier called Bastard, who guards Eric's auditorium on a North Interstate.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the guy who owns it, whose name is Eric, basically goes to the bar next door and just leaves a note. You know, the door is open and it says, you know, if you want to buy something, come find me at the bar. You know, Bastard's okay. And Bastard will just sit and, like, jump at them and bark at them. And then as soon as they pet him, he rolls over on his stomach and, like, he's the best. Nobody steals anything from Bastard. He's never had anything stolen. Bastard totally charms them. And the best part of this is how he got Bastard. And I'm just going to read this. Vetter, Eric Vetter, who's the guy who owns it, forcibly rescued Bastard from a house of abusive meth heads by punching one of them in the face.
Fantastic.
Isn't that a heartwarming? See, these are the kind of heartwarming stories that I wish we could do every day of the year.
And that's one of those "our town is the greatest town in the world" sort of a story.
That's what he said. It's all sort of a North Portland gothic.
Awesome. We're here with Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Best of Portland issue is on stands now and can also be read partially or in its entirety online.
Oh, everything's online plus videos, all sorts of good stuff. I think you can Roho in action. Oh, and then Cloud City Garrison, which we didn't even talk about.
The Stormtrooper guys.
Yeah, and then there's one thing that we're doing this year that's different that we've never done before. We always get asked, you know, about these people and where they're going to perform next because a lot of them do things in town. So we created a variety show. So next Thursday at the Wonder Ballroom at 8:30, we're going to have a one-time-only variety show that's going to have the Cloud City Garrison Stormtroopers. It's going to have Roho the Therapy Llama. It's going to have Wampire, which is a local punk band that ends every set by stripping down to their underwear and dancing around. And these are skinny indie boys that you would not want to see. Let's see. We've got some 80s video magic. I mean, everything you could want to see or not want to see but be proud that Portland contains is at this variety show. So it's $7, and we're going to do that at the Wonder Ballroom next Thursday.
Excellent. And find out more about that at wweek.com or pick up a copy of Willamette Week. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week is here. Let's pay a visit to the news desk with Dawn Taylor. Ladies and gentlefolk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A macabre sale of surgical instruments used to embalm Elvis Presley's corpse will be held in the U.S. next month. The controversial auction will feature forceps, needle injectors, aneurysm hooks, an arterial tube, and lip brushes used to prepare the king's body for burial following his death in 1977.
I'm back on aneurysm hooks.
What's a lip brush?
We both went to.
I think that's like a lip gloss sort of a brush. I think it's for.
Well, that's like
painting.
A makeup tool. That's like a cosmetic tool. But what is an? Did you say aneurysm hook?
It says aneurysm hook. I don't know what that is.
I know one of those in my trunk right now.
I was just saying, is that the new, you know, the latest band on Earache Records?
I imagine it would be something that if you are embalming someone and they had had an aneurysm is basically an occlusion inside a vein that you would need if you're going to try and like whoosh the embalming fluid through their veins. If it gets stopped up somewhere because of an aneurysm, you have to stick a hook down the vein to get the clot out.
So this is a, so what this is.
I want Dawn to just talk me to sleep every night.
So this is a plumbing snake for your blood.
I'm only guessing. I don't think I've ever seen the term aneurysm hook before. I am just sort of imagining what it might be.
It's a roto-rooting device for your circulatory system.
I assume so.
Where a guy said, well, see, here's your problem right here, right? Hold on a second. And he rummages around in a toolbox and he brings up a big thing that looks like an elongated gooseneck lamp. And he said, hold on. And he just sticks it in and breaks up the road jam. There's also that thing that I was thinking it was either something kind of like that or that thing they use in Braveheart, you know, that just to just extract his organs like out of his nose or whatever it is they do. So, yes. All right.
Sale also includes rubber gloves, a comb, eyeliner, and even a toe tag for identifying Presley's corpse in the morgue. The memorabilia was kept by an unnamed senior embalmer at the Memphis Funeral Home, where the rock and roll legend's body was stored prior to his funeral. The sale is due to take place at Leslie Hindman Auctioneers in Chicago, Illinois, on August 12th, and the items are expected to fetch a total of up to $14,000. Mary Williams, a spokeswoman for the auction house, told Reuters, the mortician who prepared the body retained the toe tag and the instruments, along with the preparation room case report, the case sheet, dry cleaning tags, the hanger to the singer's suit and tie, and the coffin shipping invoice, which are all marked Elvis Presley.
See, this is why I need to, this is really why I manage my money carefully, because you never know when things like this are going to be available. And you know, it's just one day they're not for sale, the next day, bam. Did I tell you that over this last Christmas, there was a guy in Portland who had a Gacy self-portrait. And it's not like those are exceptionally rare, because the guy did like a painting a day. Yeah. I mean, he's in a 5x5 cage. What's he going to do? But Gacy would just sit there and just crank up paintings of himself as Pogo the Clown and then sell them. But, you know, not making any more of those because he's all dead and whatnot. And so I think there's maybe 400 or 500 of them in existence. And a great many of those were then purchased by, citizens.
Weirdos?
Well, like victim advocacy groups for a fetching wallpaper print. But, you know, like a lot of those, like, we don't want criminals to make any money while they're in prison, would buy them and then just destroy them.
Those killjoys.
There aren't, always get in the way of a brother's fun. So there aren't as many in existence as there might ideally be. There's a guy in Portland who was selling a Gacy painting for $1,200. And it was the same week that Laura asked me what I wanted for Christmas. And she said, so what do you want for Christmas? And I said, it's amazing that you ask that. Let me show you. And I don't even think she really read the description. I think she got as far as just seeing a picture of Pogo the Clown, which she knows very well by now, because I think this is the 8th or 9th time that I've said, you know what I'd really love for my office at home? And she just said, no, and I'm leaving. Goodbye. And then she just like stomped out. So the point is, I will need my own money to purchase these things. Yes. Clearly, that's not going to be a thing that's obtained for me.
Well, maybe we could start a foundation as part of the Emerson News Network where we could
just
purchase
a PayPal account where people can donate to your cause.
Well, I'm just saying, you know what,
to drive your wife out of your home.
There is that listener who's told me when he dies, I get that business card that his brother stole from Casey's house. True. So I just got to start making space now on my wall, is what I'm saying. Here's Dawn Taylor.
We should do our taser watch.
And by the way, Kelly Clark has skulls decorating her home, incidentally.
Just a couple.
I'm just
saying.
That's
weird.
Yeah.
There are different kinds of skulls. There's also an entire spinal column.
By the way,
cow. It's really cool.
Dawn Taylor has skulls decorating her home, by the way. Wait a minute. So do I, as a matter of fact. Do all three of us, in fact, have skulls at our homes?
Do you also have a fetal pig?
No, but I've got part of Sharon Tate's fireplace.
Oh, no, I have I have a fake alien in a jar of embalming fluid in my bathroom.
It's pretty cool. I have a trivet with Siamese twins on it.
I have one of those scary moving pictures that looks like an undead little girl, and it freaked out Rick's wife when she went into the
bathroom. Because she wasn't really
house.
Privy to the decorating scheme that adorns your domicile. And she went into the bathroom, and there was a photograph of a little girl that suddenly had fangs and was lunging from the... Why do you have a spinal column again? I forget.
Well, it's right next to the frame picture of my... father-in-law's gallbladder surgery.
Ah, well,
why would you not have a spinal column if you could?
It's actually really pretty.
There's no answer. No reason at all, Dawn.
Her family has a cattle ranch out in central Oregon, and there was just a wind sort of swept, dusted, polished, beautiful sort of spinal column. It's really pretty.
We
hang it in the library. It's right next to the pretty, wood.
We had talked about this once before, the whole thing of people finding human remains and reporting them to the police. And I always read that and I go, if I was someplace and I found a skull, I'm just going, hey, free skull.
Yeah. I think there are more people like this than we might initially think. One of those things that never occurred to me as odd until I grew up and moved away from home and realized, and then you were able to put your family in some sort of context once you were exposed to the rest of the world. But you know, my grandfather had, and this was I think not too uncommon at maybe in the 50s and 60s in my hometown. Because you know, I got Kennewickman. There's the whole Kennewickman thing where they're always finding like Indian remains and whatnot there. But I guess it was not an infrequent occurrence to find human bones kind of down by the Columbia River, because there were just there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years of Indian tribes that had lived there, and then you get buried. It's not like anybody's keeping burial records of that. And my grandfather at one point just found like a nearly complete Indian skeleton and just took it home. And just took it home and had it, like, in a sort of lit, like, one of those things that, like, you would display, like, jewelry or, you know, like, ham in, you know?
Ham?
And, you know, like, if you go to Pasta Works and there's
ham
the whole...
Very
there's
important.
The,
oh, okay.
There's the, you know, like, there's the meat case where you go, I'll take the apple wood and then also the pepper and the smoked, except him. But the Indian skeleton right here. And there was this, you know, it was like a presumably an adult, about 5 feet, in length of just, I think it was missing, like, one of the femurs or something. And, like, that was
wow.
it. Regular skeleton. And the thing is, like, nobody in my family went, and there's a goddamn skeleton in the back room. Because, you know, that was just, that's just Grandpa. That's just the way he is. So, you know, and then there's, you know, a whole bunch of other, never mind. It's a whole... The whole thing.
This is a taser watch.
Yeah, all right. Here's your taser watch for whatever the hell today is, Wednesday. Right here in the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Forget ye not that this taser watch is sponsored by mugshotlist.com, run by a good friend and listener named Andy, covering 19 counties in Oregon and 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, Ohio, always adding more counties and states, and I swear to Christ, he says it's maintained by a legion of robots that update the site day and night. So if somebody is arrested and... I'm sure eventually found innocent of a crime that they did not commit. Their mugshot is posted. You can find that at mugshotlist.com, the sponsors of today's Taser Watch. Here is Dawn Taylor with your Taser Watch for Wednesday.
A Chicago man who was arrested as part of a year-long drug investigation died at a hospital an hour after being taken into custody. Jerome Gill, 31, was arrested near his home during a sting operation after he sold drugs to an undercover Cook County Sheriff's police officer. Officers were about to apprehend Gill during the undercover, but he fled and resisted arrest. A taser stun gun was fired at Gill, but it didn't appear to subdue him. He was later subdued by officers who pulled him to the ground and placed him under arrest. Gill then began spitting up pieces of crack cocaine that he may have ingested.
That he may have ingested. Or they may have occurred naturally in his body like some sort of chemical cyst.
Gill was coherent and conversing with officers and paramedics and continued to speak with medical personnel at Gottlieb Medical Memorial Hospital in Melrose Park, but died about 1:30 p.m. An official cause of death won't be determined until toxicology results are received in about 8 weeks. He didn't respond to the taser when it was being used on him, a spokeswoman said. The hospital later told us that there were still some pieces of rock cocaine in his system.
Fantastic. Do you get the feeling that the law enforcement of this country is somehow being supplied with their tasers by Fisher-Price? Because every story that we get, it sort of seems like they're getting a sort of stunt taser or something, you know, that doesn't really actually work. I would think... Could we find it was like 200...
Unless you're like a 97-year-old grandma, then they use like they dial it up to 11.
You would think because 250,000 volts, it seems like that's a lot. So what we really ought to be doing instead of killing them or beating them or whatever it is, it seems to end up having pulping them with your nightclubs. I think anybody that can be tased like 5 or 6 times and then they continue to move around. We ought to be putting them in a lab right now and then cloning them to fight crime or perhaps terrorism.
I thought you were going to suggest it's like when you catch fish that you don't really want to eat and you just like re-release them.
Well, that's – no, but I mean, if a guy is able to resist 250,000 volts and he's not only able to stay standing but is able to struggle against law enforcement and those things are presumably designed to take down like an elephant or something, I want to know what is going on with that guy. You know what I mean? What sort of bizarre endoskeleton system he's got going on that is able to keep him functional?
I get a sense there is some inconsistency within the taser industry.
The calibration might be a little off.
I think so. It seems to be just these wildly disparate levels of lethalness that these things have. Some of them, they don't do anything. Others, they kill you.
They should, you know, really to make it more exciting for the criminals, they should give you the option of, look, we can either beat you senseless with these truncheons we have, or we can tase you. But the taser could be set on any number of levels.
It's like taser roulette, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Like 1 volt to like immolate you immediately, voltage. And then it would be your option. Hey, let me ask you this, Kelly Clark. I had this fantastic idea earlier today, and I want you to tell me whether or not I'm just up in the night about this. Would you watch a show? I referenced this when I was running down to get my visa. A show that was not Celebrity Rehab, but was just Celebrity Withdrawal. Where we just take Daniel Baldwin, or whoever, and we put him in a room on camera, and we say, look, it's not going to be a plot. You don't have to live with anybody. It's not like you don't have to go out on the street and sell hot dogs as part to earn, you know, points to, like, get a family visit. We're just going to put you in a room and put cameras on you, and you don't get any drugs for a month, and we're going to watch.
It would depend on the person, but that's a lot of defecating and sweating. And I, you know what? I can see that on Portland streets. So really, I'm sorry, Rick.
Maybe
it's a special, like a Christmas special, like a one-off. I think that might be a great idea.
Sort of a variety show kind of a thing.
Yeah. And then it's just a highlight reel.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't actually walk for the whole month. Just
okay. Well, no, they could do like a greatest hits. And I think it would depend on the celebrity, too. Yeah. Like, you don't want to see Robert Downey Jr. doing that. Andy Dick? Yes. You know? Paris Hilton? Yes.
Oh. I think this might be better as a pay-per-view sort of internet feed.
Well,
with commentary from you.
You know, the Emerson News Network is always looking for new programming, Kelly Clark.
So. Exciting.
Create some kind of a drinking game to go along with it.
Ooh,
that might make it more entertaining.
That actually might be more entertaining.
Don't forget, this Taser Watch was brought to you by mugshotlist.com, ladies and gentle folk. Good God almighty, there's so much to do in so little time. Regrettably, we're going to have to sort of bring the curtain down on this whole thing because Greg and Sarah are getting ready to roll on in here in just a short while. We got the Pop Culture Authority done. We may, in fact, have to put off the top five till tomorrow, which I've got it right.
I know, look at that.
Right here. I hold it in my hands. All right.
Do it really fast?
I want to give it justice. I want to do it the right way.
You know, yesterday, our show went on for like 45 minutes, an hour longer than normal.
Yesterday's show,
extra stuff.
Yesterday's show is 3 hours and 2 minutes long.
I see. Wait, can you at least tease and tell me what I will hear tomorrow? The
top five. It is the top five songs that always seem to be playing whenever I'm in a Winco.
Ooh.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's gold, baby.
That is gold.
I just don't want to rush through it. And also, here's the thing. Is like, you know, so we shared the studio with Greg and Sarah,
I can't stand those people.
They, bastards, sons of bitches. they usually tape in the afternoon, but sometimes in the morning. And depending.
How does that work for them, taping in the morning and then being drunk all day long?
I would imagine either really poorly or really well, depending on how one looks at it.
Okay.
But they usually tape in the afternoon, but, you know, like yesterday they taped, I think, before, because they had a meeting with an advertiser or something. And those days are sort of. I mean, I'm tempted to say that they're great, but it's that thing of where I realize now that there is in fact no governing device on me at all. There is no one to tell me to stop. And I think if Dawn had not actually just said, like, I have to go. I need to leave and see my husband, you know, for at least a few minutes. You know, I think I would have just I would not have gone home at all. I would have still been talking at midnight. But then a day like today. I have to sort of keep some kind of self-discipline because otherwise I get off the air and then they're just sitting in the kitchen sort of, you know, like staring at the floor, like wondering when I'm going to be quiet. So in any event, so we'll have to do that top five tomorrow because I want to do it justice.
I'm excited for that one.
Do we have any other news items that are really crucial to get to today?
Crucial? No.
I have this Andy Dick sound, but that should probably also wait till tomorrow.
Sounded really weird.
I teased the Sarah Palin story, but I could get through that really quick.
Let me give you just this little bit of a teaser for the Andy Dick sound that we'll get to tomorrow. So this is This is Joy, what's her name, from The View. Joy
Behar.
Behar. Joy Behar interviewing Andy Dick on CNN about the subject of Lindsay Lohan and her incarceration. And it's like, I don't know whether her producer was just like goofing with her when he said, no, I got somebody great. It's Andy Dick. No, he'll be fantastic. No, you know, or if she knew what she was in for, or if there was just like nobody else available. You know, if they just went through the Rolodex and they tried everybody they could possibly. Burt Ward? No, crap. Well, Andy Dick. You know, if he was like there just below, like when you can't get Gallagher 2 on your show, you get Andy Dick. So Andy Dick comes on, and I just loathe Andy Dick with everything in me. But I loathe Joy Behar as well. And so then it becomes this sort of irresistible force, immovable object of things that I deride at every opportunity. And I realize that in this equation, I actually come down on Andy Dick's side of things. Because he at least is just, he is what he is. Like, he is just an overtly weird, freak. Whereas she is sort of on CNN, which means that she is sort of masquerading as a journalist. And so I enjoy seeing her made uncomfortable. And nobody makes people uncomfortable like Andy Dick. So this is just a little bit of a tease. I think she references the fact that he has been in rehab 10 times with a variety of sponsors. And his one of his sponsors was Chris Farley. And so this is a little bit of...
All right. Well, let's talk about some of your other efforts to stay sober. You did AA. Chris Farley was your sponsor. What was that like?
Chris Farley took me to my first AA meeting.
And?
He stood up. He shared. He literally had a tie like this. But you know how he overstuffed shirt? And he's talking, I'm no and I got Andy Dick here. I don't know. It didn't. I recently found the AA book that he gave me. That said, Andy, I hope this helps you the way it helped me.
Oh, well, he's dead.
That's my point.
And then it's just followed by the most awkward silence. I swear to God, it's just followed by like 10 seconds of her staring at the camera going, well then. And the interview is just replete with moments like that. So we'll get to that tomorrow. Because, you know, Andy Dick is a timeless sort of thing. He is eternal. All right, on that note. All right, and so forth. So Willamette Week, Best of Portland issue is on stands right now at this very moment. You'll get it. You can also read it in its entirety online at wweek.com. The event happens at the Wonder Ballroom.
On Thursday, July 29th.
And is it a ticketed thing or is it just a...
it's $7.
Come one, come all thing. Okay, so that's you and the tickets are available?
The tickets are available at the door, or you can come to Willamette Week at our office. You can just look it up online and find it. And those are $7. Or if you can go to wweek.com/store, you can get them for $8.50.
Fantastic. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, thank you for joining us. You have to come back at some point.
I will. I can't wait to see the more, you know, all the rest of the decorations as they...
Well, you know, I think
so
really
excited. Maybe you guys might have a crane in here next time.
I think if we put the right number of polished human bones on the wall,
I will definitely come back then.
Might be to all of our tastes. All right, fantastic. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week and so forth. Join us tomorrow, and our guests will include Alex Ilika from Viso, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate you being there. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Kinnicott. And don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Wednesday, July 21st, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, thanks for listening. Don't forget, the live stream continues next and 24 hours a day after a brief musical interlude with encores of Legion of News and today's Rick Emerson Show. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow, and watch out for snakes. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.